I hope to conclude this in a couple more sermons. I had in my notes and then scratched those out next sermon. But when I finished this one, I realized I'm going to need a couple more because I wasn't able to get through everything that I wanted to in this one. We started the series with the intent to cover the four main chapters in the Bible which deal with the history of the empires of men that would bear rule on the earth, which, of course, those empires of man will end when Christ returns to establish God's kingdom, to reestablish God's kingdom, God's rule on this earth, which we pictured in the feast of the seventh month. Those four chapters in the Bible that deal specifically with the history of the empires of men are Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 and Revelation 17. We have already examined Daniel 2 with Nebuchadnezzar's image and the fact that the four metals of that image which Nebuchadnezzar saw represented the four empires of men that would bear rule on this earth. Daniel 7 goes through the same material, but instead of a metal image, it represents those four kingdoms with four beasts. The first was a lion, which represented the Babylonian Empire. The second was a bear, which represented the Medo-Persian Empire. The third was a leopard with four heads, representing the Greco-Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great. And the four heads picture the fact that after Alexander died young, the Greco-Macedonian Empire was divided into four sections, and two of those sections became dominant. The Seleucids in the north, starting in Syria and points north, and the Ptolemies in Egypt. Most realize that Cleopatra, who was queen in Egypt, was of the Ptolemaic lineage. She was at the end of the Ptolemaic rule of the Greco-Macedonian Empire. In fact, when she was defeated by the Romans, that's when that Greco-Macedonian Empire came to an end, or the Ptolemaic side of it. The Seleucid side had ended earlier. Daniel 7 also introduced a little horn, which plucked up three horns of the fourth beast. The fourth beast of Daniel 7 was not likened to any known beast. It was simply called terrible and dreadful. And it had 10 horns. And that beast, the fourth beast of Daniel 7, represented the Roman Empire and the 10 restorations or resurrections of that empire that would take place. We are now ready to examine. It also mentioned a little horn, which had a fulfillment in Revelation 13, which we won't get into today. That's where I stopped. We will cover half of Revelation 13 today, and the rest we'll cover next time. So we're ready to examine Revelation 13, so if you'll turn there. And that deals, Revelation 13 deals with the Roman Empire, the old Roman Empire and its resurrections. It introduces also the Holy Roman Empire, because that's what deals with the resurrections of the Roman Empire after the deadly wound that we read of was healed. But here in Revelation 13 and verse 1, we read, it says, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea." As in Daniel 7, the four beasts of Daniel 7 were pictured as coming up out of the waters of the earth or out of the sea. The waters of the earth represent the peoples of the earth. As you read in Revelation 17, we'll cover Revelation 17 in more detail next time, but a couple of verses we do need to read, Revelation 17 and verse 15, because this beast also is pictured of coming out of the sea are the woman sitting on many waters. Verse 15 says, and he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So whenever you see in biblical prophecy a reference to the sea or waters, it pictures or represents the various nations of people on this earth. You'll also see that in Revelation 12. And you'll notice in Revelation 12, starting in verse 14, this is after the dragon is cast down and he persecutes the woman. That's verse 13. And the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time, the 3.5 years of the tribulation, from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. So after this, the adversary tries to destroy the church of God, which he's not able to do because of what Mr. Dempsey read in verse 10 of Revelation chapter 3, the promises to those of a Philadelphian spirit that they would be protected from the hour of trial that will try the whole earth. God protects the woman, but Satan tries to destroy the woman by causing the peoples of the earth, the nations of the earth, to try and destroy her. That's the water cast out of his mouth as a flood to overwhelm her, but not able to be done. You read of that in Luke 21. Luke 21 in Luke's account of the Olivet prophecy that Jesus Christ gave. But Luke 21 and verse 12 says, but before all these things, and these things he's referring to are the fearful sights and signs from heaven, the heavenly signs, the sixth seal of Revelation chapter 6. Before the heavenly signs, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you. That's the Revelation 12, 13, where Satan strives to destroy the woman. They will persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. That is yet to take place. Doesn't say because Christ was speaking to his disciples, doesn't say that that is going to be simply the ministry that he's going to try to destroy. He tries to destroy the church. So people will be persecuted. The trials that Mr. Dempsey was talking about, are we ready to face those? And that's something we need to cover perhaps in more detail as well, because it's an important subject, because we are going to face trials. Now, as I've always understood, if somebody's going to try and kill me, I say, fine, go ahead. At least I'd like to say that. But what if they say, if you don't recant what you believe, I'm going to kill your wife. I'm going to kill your children. That's a different subject. You know, my own skin is mine, okay? But I have my life, but they're going to kill those that are close to me. That's something, that's another trial. That's a trial that you need to face as well, because that might happen. Verse 14, therefore, settle in your heart not to meditate therefore on what you will answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. You will be betrayed even by parents, brothers, relatives, and friends, and they will send some of you to your death. So those whom you know, friends and family, may be the ones that betray us. We don't know. But that's what the book says. Are we prepared for that? That's a whole other subject. And you will be hated by all. Matthew's account says, all nations for my name's sake. The waters of the earth, that are spewed out of Satan's mouth to destroy God's people, the nations and the peoples of this earth. So waters picture that. And these nations of Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 are simply formed by the peoples of the earth, by men. These are the nations or kingdoms of men. Now, this beast of Revelation 13 represents the Roman Empire, its history and its future. The Roman Empire of history and its future, because not all of the things that are written in Revelation 17 have come to pass yet. They're in the process of coming to pass. But much of what you read in Revelation 13 has come to pass, though not quite yet all. Now, it says here, because we didn't finish reading it, I stood on the sand of the sea and saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on its horns 10 crowns, and on its heads a blasphemous name. Now, there are several references to seven heads and 10 horns. What are the seven heads here in Revelation 13? As we'll read in verse 2, we won't do it just yet. But verse 2 talks about this beast being a composite beast. Oh, I'll let you just go ahead and read it. Now, the beast which I saw, verse 2, was like a leopard. It had the body of a leopard, which you know is one of the beasts of Daniel chapter 7. Had the body of a leopard, feet that were like the feet of a bear, which is one of the beasts of Daniel 7. And his mouth like the mouth of a lion, which was the other beast of Daniel 7. So we have the leopard, the bear, and the lion, and the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. The beast of Revelation 13 is a composite beast. It has devoured the beasts that were before it. Symbolically, it conquered all the territory that they had, and it was now Roman territory. Okay, it had devoured the beasts before it. The seven heads of Revelation 13 are the seven heads that you count up in Daniel 7. The lion had one head, the bear had one head, the leopard had four heads, and the dreadful beast had one head and ten horns. So when you put 3 plus 4 is 7. The seven heads represent the seven heads, or the seven kingdoms, if you wish, that were devoured. The body of the leopard, the feet of the bear, the mouth of the lion. Those are where the seven heads come from. The 10 horns of the final beast. The 10 resurrections of the Roman Empire, because the fourth beast was the Roman Empire, the dreadful and terrible beast. But you see here that that beast was to devour those before it. Daniel 7 and verse 7. Daniel 7 and verse 7. Says, and after this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, and it was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. The 10 horns we'll see later of Daniel 7 are the same as the 10 horns on the beast in Revelation 13. But Daniel 7 and verse 23 shows, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom, which it was, on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and trample it and break it in pieces. So it devoured not the whole earth, the orb we call the earth, but the civilizations of that time, the Babylonian, which was swallowed up by the Medo-Persian. And it's interesting, the Babylonian Empire lasted less than 100 years. The Medo-Persian Empire lasted just at 200 years. The Greco-Macedonian lasted 300 years. The Roman devoured all of these, the territory of all of these, and it lasted 500 years, from 31 BC to 476 AD. So this fourth beast devoured the earth. So it had devoured the territories of the four beasts, of the three beasts before it. So in Revelation 13, this beast is made up of all of the beasts, all of the empires. It's their territories and consumed them. But notice in verse 2, Satan is behind these governments of men. And the dragon gave him, this Roman Empire, this beast, his power, his throne, and great authority. And it lasted 500 years. And it was a marvel to all the people of the earth. In verse 3, the whole world marveled at the empire. And I saw the heads, one of the heads, as if it were mortally wounded. We'll get into that shortly. But the God of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4, is the ultimate ruler of the nations and governments of this earth. And its political leaders. Please remember that and don't forget that. The nations of this earth, all of them, the power behind them is the God of this world. All of them, the God of this world. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 3 and verse 10, there is none righteous, no, not one. And that's referring to humankind. Simply quoting Ecclesiastes, the essence of Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 20. There is none righteous, no, not one. The nations of this earth, including the United States, are not the nations of God. The nations and kingdoms of the earth are Satan's. And he offered to give all of the nations of the earth to Jesus Christ, if you remember, if Christ would fall down and worship him. Now, why was Christ going to return to this earth? To take over the rule of all the nations of this earth, to become King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Satan tried to circumvent that by saying, I will give you the authority of all these nations. You don't have to come and die. I'll give them to you right now. All you have to do is worship me. And Christ would not do that. You see that in Luke chapter 4, Luke's account of the temptation in the wilderness. But Luke chapter 4, and starting in verse 5, dealing with the one temptation, covetousness, the lust of the eyes. Luke 4, starting in verse 5, then the devil, taking him up to a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. Now, obviously, this was a vision, because there's no mountain that you can see all the kingdoms of the earth from the top of. But he showed him all the kingdoms of the earth in a moment of time. Devil said to him, all this authority I will give you. Now, please understand, all this was his. His throne was on this earth. He is the God of this world. He's the ruler of this earth and its kingdoms. God once ruled this earth and Lucifer was administering that rule. But when Lucifer sinned, he was removed from administering God's rule on this earth. But God did not remove his throne from him. He is still the God of this world. His throne is still here. Christ, in this temptation in the wilderness, faced, confronted the adversary, and defeated him. Unlike Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were tempted in the very same ways that Satan tempted Jesus Christ. Make these stones bread. If you're hungry, you fasted 40 days, make these stones bread. Lust of the flesh. This is the lust of the eyes. Took him and showed him all the kingdoms of the earth so he could see them. I'll give these to you. Just worship me. And then the pride of life took him to the pinnacle of the temple and told him to jump off. Why do that? Except to show you that, show people or show anyone that you could. It's a temptation to pride. You think I can't do it? Well, I'll show you. But he said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. Therefore, verse 6, all this authority I will give you and their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. This is Satan's domain, and all that is in his domain is his. Therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours. You don't have to come and die. I'll make you ruler of this earth now. All you have to do is worship me. He tempted Adam and Eve with the same three temptations: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. He tempted Jesus Christ with the same three temptations: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Christ overcame him. We're going to be tempted in the same way: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Now, that's an ongoing trial, something that we have to face every day. And if we overcome the adversary and his temptations just as Jesus Christ did, then we will sit down with Christ on his throne, just as he sat down with his Father on his throne. That's the promise over here in Revelation chapter 3. Revelation 3, at the end of the section about those of Laodicean spirit, verse 21, to him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Tying it in with what Mr. Dempsey said, temptations and trials are for our growth. God learns about us from them, and they are there to strengthen us. I know Mr. Dempsey, and I'm sure Mr. Brunick understands as well. You can look at weights all your life. If you don't do anything with them, you'll never get stronger. You can look at them. They're sitting in the corner. You can go into that room and look at them. Say, boy, that's, you know. But as long as you look at them, you're not going to get any stronger. It's as you lift weights, or as, you know, some of the strongest individuals were supervisors on a construction job, because they did everything. You know, they would, one of the strongest men I knew was in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and he was a supervisor in a power plant. But his job was to make sure that all the other people did their work, and sometimes he pitched in and did it. But, you know, we would call it cross-training today. But he did all kinds of things. But he was strong because he lifted. He worked. We get stronger spiritually as we use God's Spirit to become more and more like Jesus Christ of Nazareth and his nature and his character. So unless we get into the arena and actually work and do what God tells us to do, we'll never get any stronger. That's a whole other subject which we'll cover some other time. But back to Revelation chapter 3. Chapter 13. Sorry about that. And verse 3. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. The whole world marveled at the Roman Empire, its strength. But Rome fell after nearly five centuries to barbarians. The five centuries, again, were from 31 BC to 476 AD. As we covered in the previous message in Daniel 7, Rome fell in stages to various barbarian tribes, and the word barbarian refers to what the Romans called. Any people that were not Roman were considered barbarian. And these were Germans. These were Germanic tribes. And most of the old-timers have heard of Vandals and the Heruli and the Ostrogoths. Those were the three barbarian tribes that eventually conquered various portions and finally the whole Roman Empire. The Vandals had first conquered the southern portion of the Roman Empire in Africa. The Roman Empire fell in stages, and the first part of that empire fell to the Vandals, who conquered the Roman territory in North Africa. Then Rome itself fell a couple decades later to Odoacer, O-D-O-A-C-E-R, Odoacer of the Heruli, H-E-R-U-L-I. He was a Herulean, which was another Germanic tribe from Northern Europe. But Odoacer conquered Rome in 476 AD. That's when the old Roman Empire came to an end. He himself was eventually conquered by Theodoric, the Ostrogoth. And Ostrogoth is simply Eastern Goth when you understand the German language. The Ostrogoths were Eastern Goths from the area of Germany, another Germanic tribe. But Theodoric, T-H-E-O-D-O-R-I-C, Theodoric conquered Odoacer and Heruli in 493 A.D. He ruled and they ruled until, and that was when, and it says here, the deadly wound, one head was wounded mortally. When the old Roman Empire fell, that's when the empire fell, okay, at the hand of the barbarian tribes from Germany, the Germanic tribes of the Vandals, Heruli, and the Ostrogoths. That's when the Roman Empire fell. When that deadly wound was healed, was when Roman rule was restored back to Rome. When Roman rule was restored to Rome, and that occurred in 554 AD, when Justinian, who was the emperor in Constantinople, the Roman Empire in the east, conquered the Ostrogoths, defeated the Germanic tribes under Theodoric's lineage, and restored Roman rule back to Rome, and that was in 554 AD. That's when Justinian I from Constantinople, he had first restored and conquered the Vandals in North Africa around 534 AD, but the Rome The Romans did not restore Roman rule to Rome until 20 years later, in 554 AD, when Justinian restored Roman rule at that time to the empire in the west. He was the emperor in the east in Constantinople. But when that occurred, that's when the deadly wound was healed. And that's when the Holy Roman Empire began. You'll read in history about the imperial restoration that began with Justinian. Justinian was the one who restored the empire to Roman rule in Rome. It was called the Imperial Restoration. That marked the beginning of the Holy Roman Empire, which is covered in more detail in Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17 deals exclusively with the Holy Roman Empire, because in that chapter, the woman is riding the beast, and the woman is a symbol of the false church. And riding the beast shows a close union between church and state. And we'll cover more about the Holy Roman Empire in Revelation 17. Verse 4. So they worshiped the dragon. They were worshiping the adversary, Satan, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast and who is able to make war with him? After the imperial restoration, the beast became a political and religious system. There was a close tie between church and state from that time forward. There was the Roman emperor, and there was also the religious leader of the false church, and they were in close union. We'll read more about that next time from some history that we have on that concerning the Holy Roman Empire. That's why it's called Holy Roman Empire. Not that there's anything holy about it, but it is a close union between church and state. But after the imperial restoration, the beast became that political union with a religious system. This is why the woman is pictured as riding the beast in Revelation 17. Man worships Satan, and frankly, though people don't, now some people worship Satan outright, but most people, all religions of this earth, other than God's, worship the adversary. That's something that most people don't like to hear, and that's why you don't say that to anybody else who doesn't understand. But all people outside of the Church of the Living God, all people worship the adversary. That is indeed a fact. Man worships Satan in all of his religions, man's religions. But we see here the beast was also worshipped. The political government leader was also worshipped. Long before even the Holy Roman Empire, the Roman emperors proclaimed themselves as deities, as gods. If you want to read on that, you can look up C.R. Taylor's work titled The Divinity of the Roman Emperor. The Divinity of the Roman Empire, Emperor, written by C.R. Taylor. He goes into the fact that the Roman emperors proclaim themselves as gods to be worshipped. The Holy Roman Empire is a union of state and church, or church and state. Again, the woman is riding the beast. But it is the beast, the government, who brings persecution first. The church had no authority to put people to death the way they tried to. Okay. The Spanish Inquisition, it was the government behind the church that enabled them to do what they did. So, verses 4 through 10 of Revelation 13 are dealing with the beast. You'll see the fact that it's the beast being spoken of. They worship the beast. And he was given, of verse 5, a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. The 42 months deals with the political system, the governmental system, not the religious system, because the religious system continued unfazed or uninterrupted. But the phrase, he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, deals with the beast. And even before the Holy Roman Empire, Constantine, how many are familiar with Constantine? One of the Holy Roman emperors, or Roman emperors, not Holy Roman. He was of the Roman Empire. Constantine supposedly was converted to Christianity. Supposedly. He convened the Council of Nicaea in 330 or so, somewhere 330 something in there. 325, okay, somewhere in there. 325 AD, he convened the Council of Nicaea. It was at the Council of Nicaea, under Constantine's direction, that many of the Catholic doctrines or doctrines became dogmatized. Sunday worship, Easter worship, and on, okay? Many of those ideas became a part of Catholic dogma under Constantine. And that was before the Holy Roman Empire. So, when it talks about here, they worshiped the dragon and gave authority to the beast, and they also worshiped the beast, and he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. He was given authority to continue 42 months. Not just the Holy Roman Empire, but the Roman Empire that continued under the Holy Roman Empire as well. That's when the Spanish Inquisition continued and so on. What about the 42 months? What, biblically, prophetically speaking, how long is 42 months? Now, in the literal days, it's 3.5 years. That's 42 months of prophetic months. There are 30 days in a prophetic month. And if you take 30 times 42, you get 1260, okay? Day for a year, you'll have 1260 years. Is there anything about the Holy Roman Empire that goes 1260 years? Well, if you take the beginning of the Holy Roman Empire in 554 AD, and you go to the end of Napoleon's reign, don't think about Waterloo, because it wasn't Waterloo. But Napoleon abdicated the throne of France and Italy, and you can read that in history about his edict of abdication. He abdicated the throne on November 11th in 1814. And if you add 1260 to 554, you get 1814. So he continued for 42 months, 42 prophetic months. So from the time of the imperial restoration in 554 until the abdication of Napoleon as emperor from France, of France and Italy in 1814, you have 42 months. Not Waterloo. He had gone to Elba. He had been exiled, came out of Elba, raised an army, tried to, and he got nowhere. He met his Waterloo, if you understand. He was defeated by Wellington at Waterloo. He tried to raise an army and to restore himself, but he failed. And it's interesting, the British made, well, they did several things. If you ever go, well, you did you ever go to Waterloo when you were in Germany? Well, both of you, neither of you did. Okay, well, that's in Belgium, right? Yeah, we when we went to Normandy for the feast, Mr. Meeker had a trip that he had planned, and we took that trip. It was a week before the feast began, but we went through several battle sites in Europe at the time. We went to Bastogne, which was also in Belgium. We went to Waterloo. We ended up there. We ended up in Dunkirk, and then Bruges, I think. We ended up in Bruges. But anyway, we went through Brussels, saw the Godiva plant. If you know what Godiva is, you don't know what Godiva is. Well, if you've ever had chocolate, it's some of the best chocolate you'll find. Belgians are very good at making chocolate. Anyway, but at Waterloo, the British had defended against Napoleon on a ridgeline. But after the battle and Napoleon was defeated, they leveled that ridge, used the dirt from that ridge to build a hill. And on the top of that hill, they had taken all of Napoleon's cannon, which were bronze, melted them down, and built a big bronze lion that they put on top of the hill facing back toward France. So that if anybody in France ever wanted to do that again, they would see this British lion looking at them. But anyway, we climbed up that hill, 200 steps. It was a big hill. Fascinating sight, but we saw that. But that was Waterloo, and that was not when Napoleon was, he was defeated there, but he abdicated his throne in 1814. And that, interestingly enough, was exactly 1,260 years after the Imperial Restoration. You'll find in Revelation 17 that five are fallen, and those five that are fallen are the same five that you find of that lasted 42 months. And we'll cover that in Revelation 17. Verse 8 of Revelation 13. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life. And they were worshiping the beast. They were worshiping the empire and the Holy Roman Empire, whose names were not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Why does it say here that from the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world? Can have you write a little piece of paper, take a piece of paper, put your name on it, and explain why the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. Well, God had devised his plan for humankind before Adam and Eve were created. In God's plan, he had a contingency, obviously, that if Adam and Eve sinned, and then a member of the God family would come to the earth as a lamb for the slaughter to pay the penalty as a sacrificial lamb for sin. So Christ knew he was going to have to die if Adam and Eve sinned before Adam and Eve were created. Now, God anticipated the idea that Adam and Eve would sin. Why? Because Satan had influenced a third of the angels to sin. So how are these two human beings going to resist? If he had influenced a third of the angels to sin, he would be most likely able to influence a third of humankind to sin. So do we have a struggle that we are in? Because we've got to overcome the same adversary. But the thing is, we have help that Adam and Eve did not have. We have access to God's Spirit. It is a literal fact that we are in a constant daily struggle with the adversary. Are we going to win, defeat, and overcome? That's in our court. Verse 9, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone has God's Spirit, please understand what I'm saying, Christ is saying. He who leads into captivity will go into captivity. So this is talking about in the future, there are going to be those who will lead people into captivity. God's warning is that if you lead somebody into captivity, you're going to go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. So anyone who is going to inflict punishment on his people are going to have the same thing done to them. Here is the patience, perseverance, and faith of the saints, those who endure to the end, those who will not go in, if those who will not yield to the adversary are going to be blessed. You'll see over here in Matthew 24, and this is the last passage that we will read. Matthew 24. Matthew 24, and starting in verse 9. Pardon me. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation. And this is Revelation 12, 13 again. And kill you. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another. And many false prophets will arise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. God is going to punish all those who afflict his people in the future. Vengeance is mine, God says, and I will repay. But God is going to bless with membership in his family all those who indeed endure to the end. What you read in Revelation 13, Revelation 13, 1 through 3, deals with Rome before it fell, and then eventually it was restored with the Holy Roman Empire. Verses 4 through 10 primarily deal with the beast side of the union of church and state of the Holy Roman Empire. Verses 11 through 18, which we will cover next time, deal with the woman side, the church's side of that union. More next time. Have a good Thanksgiving, since we will not be here.